eKatra Podcast Conversations for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of eKatra AI.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are tackling something truly massive, so energetic it literally created the atoms that make us up.
Yeah, we're diving deep into cosmic destruction and creation.
Exactly. Guided by this fantastic book, Supernova, Cosmic Engines of Life and Evolution by astrophysicist Dr. Org Rao.
And it's not just about giant explosions out in space, is it? This is really about understanding how the death of these massive stars actually created the elements we need to exist, you know, the oxygen, the carbon.
Right. And not just that, but how these same explosions gave us the tools to measure the entire universe, even figure out its ultimate fate. It's kind of mind-bending.
It is. There's this amazing paradox at the core. You need this incredible violence, this destruction to get complexity, to get life. That's what's so fascinating. How can something that briefly outshines its entire galaxy be fundamentally an engine for renewal? That's what we want to unpack today, linking the deep physics to our own existence.
And Dr. Grauer is really the perfect guide for this. He's an associate professor, an active researcher. He's right there working with the actual data, observational cosmology.
Yeah, he's not just a theorist. Mm-hmm. He's involved in the big surveys, analyzing the light from these supernovae as they happen.
Exactly. So he brings this frontline perspective. He's using supernova as these standard candles we'll talk about, but he frames it all in this really personal way. He calls it our human cosmic heritage.
I like that. It connects the complex science back to us.
It does. And his main idea, the core thesis, is that supernovae are these essential engines. They do two huge things at once. First, they're element factories making and scattering all the heavy stuff needed for planets and life.
Yeah.
And second, they're incredibly precise tools for measurement, you know, for cosmology, for understanding things like dark energy.
And the power involved.
Mm.
It's just staggering. You mentioned in the notes, a single supernova can, just for a few seconds, release more energy than our sun will over its entire 10 billion year life.
Yeah, unbelievable power. That scale is what makes the cosmic alchemy possible.
Okay, so let's get into the physics. The book breaks it down, saying there are basically two main ways a star can go supernova, depending on what kind of star it is.
That's right. Two main paths to stellar death.
So the first one, that's the core collapse supernovae, type 2 Eta Icae.
Exactly. These come from the real giants, stars that start out at least, say, 8 times more massive than our sun.
Okay. Big ones.
Huge ones. They burn through their fuel incredibly fast, fusing lighter elements into heavier ones, you know, hydrogen to helium, helium to carbon, building up layers like an onion inside.
And that process creates outward pressure, fighting against gravity.
Precisely. It's this constant balancing act. But that fusion process has a limit. It stops when the core starts making iron.
Okay. Remember reading this part. Iron is different, isn't it?
Completely different. Fusing elements up to iron releases energy. But fusing iron actually absorbs energy. It steals energy from the core.
So the furnace goes out, basically.
Instantly. The outward pressure just vanishes.
Yeah.
And gravity, which has been pulling inward for millions of years, suddenly wins. Catastrophically.
And the core just collapses.
Implodes.
Yeah.
At something like a quarter of the speed of light, it crushes down into this incredibly dense object, a neutron star, or if the star is massive enough, a black hole. We're talking densities where a teaspoon of this stuff would weigh billions of tons.
Wow.
And then comes the rebound. The material falling in slams onto this newly formed super dense core and literally bounces off. It creates this massive shockwave.
The bounce, that's the explosion part.
That's the trigger. This shockwave is boosted by this immense flood of tiny particles called neutrinos, which actually carry away most of the energy tears through the rest of the star.
Ripping it apart and flinging its guts out into space.
Exactly. And that's how all those elements forged inside the star get distributed. We actually saw the proof with supernova 1987A. We detected the neutrinos, which was direct evidence for this whole core collapse idea.
Okay, so that's path number one. Massive star, iron core, collapse, bounce, boom. What's the second path? You mentioned thermonuclear supernovae, type Ia.
Right, type Ia. These are totally different beasts. They don't start with a massive star collapsing. They start with a white dwarf.
A white dwarf. That's what's left after a smaller star, like our sun, dies.
Yes.
Like, usually pretty stable.
Very stable. They're incredibly dense, but they're held up against gravity by something called electron degeneracy pressure. It's a quantum mechanical effect. Think of it like an internal scaffolding holding the star up.
But that scaffolding has a breaking point.
It does, and that's the key. These white dwarfs aren't usually alone. They're often in binary systems, orbiting with another star.
Okay. So it's stealing material from its partner.
Precisely. It pulls gas, mostly hydrogen and helium, from its companion star, piling it onto its own surface. Slowly, bit by bit, the white dwarf gets heavier.
Until it hits some kind of limit?
Exactly. It approaches a critical mass known as the Tundra-Sekhar limit. It's about 1.4 times the mass of our sun. At that precise point, the electron degeneracy pressure just can't hold up against gravity anymore.
So it collapses like the big stars?
No, that's the fascinating part. It doesn't collapse and bounce. Because it's made mostly of carbon and oxygen, when it hits that limit, the pressure and temperature spike so high that runaway carbon fusion ignites everywhere inside the star at once.
The whole thing just goes off.
The whole thing. A complete thermonuclear detonation. It utterly obliterates the white dwarf. Nothing is left behind.
And because they all explode right when they hit that specific mass limit.
They all release almost exactly the same amount of energy. They have a consistent peak brightness. Grar calls them nature's most precise nuclear bombs. And that predictability is crucial.
Okay, that makes sense. So this leads us straight into the next big idea. Cosmic alchemy, all this violence. What does it actually create? What does it mean for us?
Right. So we said massive stars fuse elements up to iron while they're alive. But where do all the elements heavier than iron come from? Gold, platinum, uranium, lead, all that stuff.
The supernova explosion itself.
Exactly. It takes the unbelievable temperatures and pressures during the explosion, what's called explosive nucleosynthesis, to forge those heavier elements.
So the gold in jewelry, the uranium in reactors, it was literally made in the seconds a star was tearing itself apart.
Pretty much, yeah. Forged in that blast and then flung across the galaxy in the supernova remnant like seeds.
Seeding the clouds where new stars and planets will form.
Uh-huh. It's this constant cycle. And it's essential. Without these explosions enriching the universe, we'd basically just have hydrogen and helium. No rocky planets, no water, certainly no life as we know it. It's, again, that violence creating the conditions for complexity.
That's where Grauer's human cosmic heritage idea really hits home, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's taking it from abstract astrophysics to something deeply personal. Think about it. The oxygen you're breathing right now.
Yeah.
Forged in a star. The carbon in your muscles, the iron in your blood. None of it was made here on Earth. It was all created inside stars, many long dead, and scattered by these supernova explosions across space and time to eventually become part of our solar system, our planet.
We really are star stuff, or maybe supernova stuff.
We are supernova stuff. It gives you this incredible sense of connection to the cosmos, doesn't it? This deep physical link.
It definitely shifts your perspective. Okay, so we've got the element factory part, but what about the other role? You mentioned the Type Ia supernovae being measurement tools, standard candles.
Right. Because Type Ia supernovae are so reliably consistent, they all detonate at the Chandrasekhar limit and release pretty much the same amount of light, astronomers can use them as cosmic distance markers.
How does that work exactly?
Well, if you know how bright something truly is, its intrinsic brightness, and you measure how bright it appears from Earth, you can calculate how far away it must be. It's like knowing the wattage of a light bulb. The dimmer it looks, the farther away it is.
So Type Ia supernovae are like standard cosmic light bulbs scattered across the universe.
Perfect analogy. And this ability to measure vast distances accurately totally changed cosmology. But you know, it's interesting. Observing supernovae has forced big changes in thinking before. Think about Tycho Brahe back in 1572.
Oh, right. He observed a supernova, didn't he? A new star.
He did. And he observed it very, very carefully. His measurements showed it was much farther away than the moon out in the realm of the stars.
Which totally contradicted the old idea that the heavens beyond the moon were perfect and unchanging.
Exactly. It shattered that ancient paradigm. His meticulous observation helped kickstart the scientific revolution just by looking closely at an exploding star.
And fast forward a few centuries, Type Ia supernovae did something similar.
They really did. In the late 1990s, two teams of astronomers, the Supernova Cosmology Project and the HiZ Supernova Search Team.
The ones led by Perlmutter, Schmidt, and Rees, who won the Nobel Prize.
Those are the ones. They were using these Type Ia standard candles to measure the expansion rate of the universe way back in time. Everyone expected to find that gravity was slowing the expansion down.
Makes sense. Gravity pulls things together.
But that's not what they found. The distant supernovae looked fainter than they should have, even accounting for distance.
Fainter means farther away.
Farther away than they would be if the expansion was slowing down. The only explanation was that the expansion of the universe isn't slowing, it's accelerating.
Wow. They went looking for the brakes and found the gas pedal instead.
Precisely. And that discovery was the first real direct evidence for what we now call dark energy, this mysterious repulsive force that's pushing the universe apart faster and faster. All thanks to the consistent way a white dwarf explodes when it gets too heavy.
That's incredible. A tiny physical limit on a dead star revealing the fate of the entire cosmos.
It really is, but it also opens up huge questions, right? We know that it's accelerating, but why?
Mm-hmm.
What actually is dark energy? The standard candle showed us the effect, but the cause is still a massive mystery.
Okay, so pulling this all together, if we were to summarize the really key takeaways from Grau's work here, what should someone listening really hold on to?
I think there are a few big ones. First, probably that idea we keep coming back to, violence as the engine of creation. You have to accept that cosmic complexity, the stuff needed for life, emerges from incredibly destructive events. It's not peaceful, it's explosive.
Right. The universe isn't static, it's dynamic and, well, violent in its processes of change.
Second is the sheer cosmic interconnectedness. We are fundamentally built from the ashes of dead stars. That cycle connects everything, stars, galaxies, planets, us. It puts our existence into a much grander context.
Yeah, that supernova stuff idea, it really sticks with you.
And third, maybe the power of observation driving science. Like with Tycho, and later with the dark energy discovery, it's looking closely at the universe, even at these single explosive events, that forces us to update our understanding, to accept that reality might be stranger than our theories predict.
Meticulous observation, challenging long-held assumptions. That's a recurring theme in science.
Definitely.
For me, thinking back on all this, the thing that really surprised me, or maybe impressed me the most, was just the precision of that Chandrasekhar limit. The idea that this very specific physical threshold for a white dwarf could become such a reliable cosmic ruler. It's just amazing how microphysics scales up to reveal macrocosmic truths.
That precision is astounding, isn't it? But Grauer also reminds us, you know, there's still so much you don't know. We have a good handle on the Tite Vaia mechanism, but the exact details of how a core collapse explosion really gets going, the physics inside that bounce and shockwave, still fuzzy. And dark energy remains almost entirely mysterious.
So the next generation of tools will be key, like gravitational wave detectors.
Absolutely. Things like LIGO and Virgo and future detectors, they're giving us a whole new way to see these explosions, not just with light, but with ripples in space-time itself. It's opening new windows into the heart of the engine.
Which leads to a great final thought for everyone listening. Grau points out these ongoing mysteries. So the question for you is, what fundamental secret of physics do you think might be hiding in the light or the gravity waves from the next big supernova? What discovery is waiting out there in the echo of a dying star?
Yeah, what's the next paradigm shift that a supernova observation will trigger? Something to ponder.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ikatra Foundation.